Welcome to the market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, November 17. And before we take a look at what happened today and this week in the marketplace, a reminder, looking ahead to next week, Thanksgiving week, it is a holiday-shortened trading session. Markets will be closed Thursday in observance of Thanksgiving Day, and most markets will be closing at noon on Friday. So what happened today? Well, Wall Street ended the week on a sour note. Major indices falling modestly as investors are now weighing the fate of the Republican tax overhaul plan. So for the day, the Dow down 100 points at 23,357. The S&P 500 down 7 points at 2578. And the NASDAQ, after a record-setting week again, closing down 11 points to end the week at 6782. For the week, the S&P down about 0.3%, the Dow down 0.25%, while the NASDAQ gained nearly 0.5% in the trade for the week. Oil played a role in the marketplace again this week, and today oil rebounded more than 2% after falling for 5 straight sessions as a major U.S. crude pipeline was shut and traders anticipated an OPEC deal to extend curbs on production. Prices, however, fell for the first week in 6, pressured by rising U.S. output data and doubts that Russia would support an extension of the OPEC output cut deal. Prices rebounded after Thursday's comments by the energy minister of Saudi Arabia, signaled a willingness to extend output cuts when OPEC meets on November 30th. Phil Flynn, an analyst at Price Futures Group in Chicago, said, "Obviously, the comments gave us a guarantee that the extension is going to happen and was a driving story overnight." He went on to say, "Globally, we're coming against the backdrop of tightness in distillate inventories and strong global refinery demand, and those catalysts will continue to drive us higher in the oil market." So much for some of the activities that happened this week. We'll take a look at some of the individual market earnings reports as we come to the end of the earnings season. But before we do that, let's look ahead to next week. What's going to happen in the holiday shortened trading week? Federal Reserve's Federal Open Market Committee will release the minutes from its October policy meeting on Wednesday. The policymakers kept interest rates unchanged during the meeting and pointed to strong economic growth and a strengthening labor market. Also scheduled on the day is the European Central Bank Governing Council meeting, in which no interest rate announcements are expected. So what are we expecting? Well, housing and manufacturing data will dominate the holiday-shortened week. The National Association of Realtors expected to report on Tuesday that existing home sales went up 0.7% to an annual rate of 5,543,000 units. Data from the Commerce Department on Wednesday will likely show that new orders for non-defense capital goods orders, excluding aircraft, and that's a closely watched proxy for business spending plans. They're expecting a 0.5% increase in October, after already seeing a 1.7% increase in September. Orders for durable goods also forecast to increase 0.3% after rising 2% in September. Cloud-based software maker Salesforce.com expected to report an increase in its third quarter revenue and profit on Tuesday, helped by strong demand for its cloud-based sales and marketing software. The company recently partnered with Google's cloud platform G Suite to support the rapidly growing growing global customer base. Fed Chair Janet Yellen will participate in moderated discussions on Tuesday in conversation with Mervyn King. That will happen in New York. Now, the world's largest standalone medical device maker, Medtronic, which reported preliminary earnings earlier this month, expected to report second quarter results on Tuesday. Lowe's Companies reports third quarter results on Tuesday, expected to benefit from the surge in demand for emergency supplies like generators and home rebuilding materials spurred by hurricanes in the quarter. The home improvement retailer taking steps to attract more contractor customers to cash in on demand from the increase in home renovation activity. Wednesday, Deere & Company expected to report higher profit and revenue for the fourth quarter. Demand improves for its farm and construction equipment in international markets. Another stock that's rather carefully watched, Campbell Soup Company, scheduled to release its results on Tuesday, and the company expected to post revenue declines in the first quarter as the company was unable to reach an agreement with a key customer for a promotional program. Investors will be looking for any updates on the partnership negotiations ahead of the holiday season. GameStop Corporation will report its third quarter results on Tuesday, expected to report a decline in profit hurt by lower sales of new gaming software and hardware. Mexico's Central Bank issued the minutes of its monetary policy meeting on Thursday. Separately, Central Bank of Argentina scheduled to release its monetary policy statement on Tuesday. And Canada wholesale trade and retail sales for September will be the main economic indicators next week, with the reports due on Tuesday and Thursday. So even though the earnings report season is pretty much wrapping down for this quarter, we still will see some activity on the financial side of some of the key components of industrial and retail activity. Max Armstrong standing by to talk markets with Dale Dirkholz of Agrivisor, based in Bloomington, Illinois. Stay with us for that look at the market harvest season wrap down when we continue on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Dale Dirkholz, Agrivisor, sitting in the studio with us this weekend. It's good to see you again,
sir. It's always good to come up and see you.
We saw something the other day from USDA, of course, in terms of a larger, ever larger corn crop. The biggest corn yield ever, much to the surprise of many of the folks in the cab.
Yeah, nobody was really looking for a number that big out of the USDA. But when you go in and you look at it, and I did the other day, all the increase from October to November came in Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, and the two Dakotas. You know, so it was the heart of the Corn Belt that really had big increases in yield and production over the last month.
Well, now, generally, we don't worry about this time of year as we're approaching Thanksgiving. There are still a few acres of corn out there. In Wisconsin, I ran the numbers on that. They still have something like 1.2 million acres of standing corn out there where Bambi can hide as the deer hunting season is underway.
You know, and not only that, we have a fair amount of bean acres that are still out in the field up in here. I was surprised on the way up into northern Illinois this morning. The number of bean fields that I saw in northern Illinois, I actually think saw more bean fields than corn fields. But, you know, as you do get into on up into Wisconsin and parts of Minnesota, and then you start going northwestern corn belt, yeah, there's still a fair amount of corn still waiting to come into the harvest.
We generally get it most all in the bin without any difficulty.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to be an issue this year because corn, you know, at this point, yeah, maybe you get a little snow, but you can still go out and harvest. It's not really a big issue. The one thing that really is kind of interesting, even some of the later corn harvest, later fields that have been harvested here of recent, you know, we're really not seeing much yield drop off. So the stock standability is holding up real well, and so are the ear shanks.
That's an interesting point. Of course, these stocks are tougher. We've really changed that landscape dramatically over the past decade, haven't we?
Oh, there's no doubt about it, you know, and it really kind of is shocking, you know, in one sense, because you walk out in a cornfield today and a big stock's about the size of a big thumb. And, you know, when I think back to the days of being a kid, you know, a big stock would be about the size of three thumbs, you know, sandwiched around each other. But the stock quality today is a lot better than what it used to be, no doubt about it.
Did this prolonged harvest help us avoid logistics problems that could have developed? I know we're putting a lot outside on the ground, but that was anticipated.
Yeah, you know, we have so many what I call permanent temporary storage facilities anymore. You know, I don't worry too much about corn piles because that's become the norm today in the heart of the Corn Belt for people to put corn out on the ground, you know, and move it somewhere later on into the winter months themselves. Logistics problems haven't been a big issue because the harvest was stretched a little bit. The other thing that I think really probably helped out the logistics issue on the Mississippi River, actually we're right at the end of summer and beginning of harvest. And so, you know, we got over what could have been a huge problem early on, and then the market was able to absorb supplies as they came in.
Have we seen the lows for this season?
Good question. I think probably we have, or if not, you know, we're getting back down close to them again. You know, we really don't have any downside risk in the corn market at this point in time. The big issue is it's going to be a long, dull winter right now. And, you know, farmers are going to have to learn to go back to old days of how do you market corn and doing things like using storage hedges, et cetera, to try to add a little bit to the dollars that they get out of that bushel.
There won't be any big home runs, I suppose, but little by little, producers can improve their situation a bit.
Yeah, they really can. You know, I mean, when you look at the corn market and the huge carry that we have in futures, you know, you got something like Dece to March, 13 cents, and you're another 9 or so going on out to May. You know, you look at those far-distant futures or you look at some of those far-distant cash bids, especially for people that have grain stored at home on the farm. You know, you're going to have to look constantly at those forward bids when you market some corn. And actually, I think hedge-to-arrive contracts for them will be the best tool to use.
The other day, we saw oil leading the market a little bit. Soybean oil helping provide a bit of a lift. What's going on there?
You know, what happened in the bean oil, the NOPA crush that we had this last week, oil yield out of a bushel of beans came in underneath what people were expecting it to be. And along with that, then, we saw that those oil stocks were tighter than expected. And so when you look forward, especially in a realm where we have crude oil and heating oil, diesel fuel that is somewhat higher here, and it looks like we're going to maintain at least a higher price profile, demand for biodiesel ought to be good, but we're still waiting on an EPA announcement or the final EPA announcement there yet.
South America has to remain in our focus, but there don't seem to be major problems there at the moment.
Right now, they're not in South America. You know, we'd been dry in northern Brazil early on, and it looks like, you know, finally the moisture pattern down there has shifted to where we're seeing more moisture up in the center and the northern areas of Brazil. Meanwhile, southern Brazil and down into Argentina have dried out, and they really needed to. They were a little on the wet side. So planting, even though it got off the mark a little bit slow, is getting caught up, and I think, you know, the condition of the crop right now in both places probably going to be seen as pretty good, but the real key becomes, you know, how does the weather unfold going forward, corn in particular.
Mid-December, we'll get a little more interested, I suppose, in soybeans, and then you've got to push the calendar back a bit before you get too excited about corn, right? That's a safrina crop?
Yeah, we shouldn't really call it a safrina crop anymore because that's a little boy or something like that, and the safrina crop is the huge crop now. But yeah, you know, that'll get put in the ground starting somewhere about February. And the issue you worry about with that second crop, how timely does it get planted? And then how quickly do they turn from a rainy season into their dry season? Because they go from a rainy pattern to a dry pattern as you move into March and on into April. So that changeover will have a lot to do with the yield on that second crop corn.
Dale, as unexciting as the picture is at this moment, isn't there almost always, during that South American growing season, something that brings at least a temporary bump up in the market?
No doubt about it. You know, you always see something that comes along down there. People get a little bit anxious about weather, whether it's in Brazil or Argentina. People get anxious about, you know, products not moving so fast. Beans in particular, because with beans, we have such a strong demand base right now. And COFCO out of China the other day said, you know, we could import 100 million tons of beans. And that's higher than the USDA and any of the privates are, you know. And when you look at that, we don't have any room for margin of error with the bean crop down there. And certainly with the corn crop, we know the same thing.
I had to laugh the other day when I saw some of the traders were expressing angst at the fact the Chinese economy maybe wasn't growing as fast as some people had thought it should. I mean, it was only 7+% growth, which is pretty rampant by most standards around the world.
Yeah, you know, people get too anxious, you know. I mean, we go back 10 years ago, China's economy was growing 8, 9, 10, 11%, you know. And, you know, then, you know, when things started to get rather robust over there, all of a sudden their growth rate slowed down and people would get a little bit nervous if they only grew at 7%, you know. And it's called, you know, we started out with a little tennis ball, you know, and now we're working with a huge beach ball. You can't expect it to keep expanding that fast, you know, simply because of the massive size. You know, when you look at the actual size, total aggregate economy, they're a little bit larger than the U.S., although simply because when you look at the population differential on a per capita basis, it's still a lot smaller than ours. But, you know, we can't sustain those 9, 10, 11% growth rates. It's just impossible because of the size of activity they've come into.
The guy in North Korea gets shoved off the front page by all this other ancillary stuff going on. But how concerned are you folks in the commodity industry about watching him and what he may or may not do?
I really don't know how to answer that because that's really a huge geopolitical question. I don't know what it means to commodities. I don't think anybody really knows. The only thing you can really say when you get into something like that, generally, war is bullish commodities. So the longer he doesn't do something means that it becomes a neutral to a negative. But if he ever starts flexing his muscle, then people start to get worried. But because there's such a close alliance between North Korea and China, you worry about the flip side. Will it force China to start to pull back from the world a little bit if tensions with North Korea really rise? And that would be a negative in the commodity environment out in the world if China starts to pull back. So it's not an easy question to answer.
Conversely, if they were to side with the United States and rein this guy in a bit, that wouldn't be bad at all, would it?
Actually, that would be a net overall plus because it would, number one, ratchet tensions down. That would have a positive ramification as far as economic activity, especially in the Asian realm. And as long as we keep their economies growing at a robust pace, you know, I think that's really good for commodities and commodity demand in general.
We have an ambassador there now who was the governor of Iowa a couple of times for many years. We thought he'd be the governor for life. Terry Branstad sitting over there with a very close connection with the grain industry of the United States cannot hurt, can it, Dale?
No, and the other thing is he also knows Prime Minister Xi really well, too. And I think that's probably the real big beneficiary in that environment is that he is already familiar with the political power structure in China and will be able to move and see things going on and probably get a bit better communication than if we had some East Coast politician sitting over there in Beijing. And yes, his connection into agriculture, that's only a plus for us in agriculture. And not just in the grain market. Let's talk about meat. You know, and I'm getting ready to do a presentation this winter for the Illinois Soybean Association. And I'm going to really start off the presentation talking about where everybody's at around the world on relative meat consumption. And when you start looking at that, especially in realm of the article we just came out with, meat is a definite required source for human protein needs as well as other benefits that we get from consuming meat in this country.
It's great to talk to you as always, and we appreciate you coming in to join us this weekend, Dale. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, and good being here.
Dale Durkles from AgriVisor.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
At the National Association of Farm Broadcasting held earlier this month in Kansas City, we had the opportunity to sit down with Tim Andreessen. He is in charge of the agricultural contracts at the CME Group, and talk about the international aspect of all of agriculture, including the trading. Because when I arrived in Chicago in 1960, the Board of Trade traded the grain market and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange traded the livestock market. Well, that's now all under the umbrella of the CME Group. And talking to Tim, I learned that indeed the market is expanding internationally.
Well, we do. And, you know, just within my world, the agricultural world, we also have dairy products, which is part of our remit. We have lumber, which is something you don't hear a lot about. You know, we continue to look at where are the key markets and what are the key products we can offer to our customers to manage risk. This summer, for example, we launched a Australian wheat contract. So producers in Australia can use this contract to manage their risk. It's focused on exports out of Western Australia, and that's a country who they've historically used our products, but you know, now they have a product that's much more specific. And the other thing is, 5 years ago we were sitting here and you asked me about the Kansas City Board of Trade.
Right.
Well, the Kansas City Board obviously became part of CME Group, and you know, at that time we were trading about 20,000 contracts a day. That's now pushing in excess of 50,000, and we've set open interest records there. So, you know, becoming part of that, becoming sitting next to the soft contract, we think has really provided access to many more risk managers around the world, the ability to spread back and forth, particularly in a year like this where you had premium issues around the wheat market. You know, we think that's been really important. And I wouldn't be surprised one day that that contract actually trades more than the soft contract.
And, of course, we've seen other wheat contracts, Minneapolis, in the mix this year. Do you see any others coming in?
Well, Minneapolis, you know, is our partner. They're yeah. You know, while they're an independent exchange, they're available to trade on Globex, which is our electronic trading platform. Right. And, you know, again, it's providing people who are managing wheat risk, you know, more flexibility. You know, the world continues to expand. Unlike corn or soybeans, where wherever you go in the world, people are going to index their price to our futures contract, you know, wheat is much more of a regional product.
Right.
So, you know, we see growth around the world in wheat production. One of the areas that you want to keep your eyes on is the Black Sea region.
Talking about options contracts, mm-hmm. continuing to grow?
Absolutely. You know, as you know, you've seen cycles in these markets, and you know, a couple of years ago, prices were fairly high for producers. They didn't think as much about getting that last 20 cents. Now, when we're, you know, sitting here with corn prices, you know, $3.50, $4 in that range, you know, being really good marketers is more important than it's ever been. And you know, options are one of the tools that we think make a lot of sense. For people, you know, who have produced big crops and, you know, they're going to have to sell some of it off the combine or maybe after the first of the year, and they're not as excited about selling, you know, this is a great opportunity to replace that ownership with a long options position.
They weren't very excited about selling corn out of the farm bins this year either. Do you see that changing, Tim?
Now, I mean, it's the one of the dynamics of producers is they're always optimistic. If you're going to bet against Mother Nature and you're willing to take on weather and you're willing to take on all that, and you know, every year grow a crop. I mean, that is the epitome of the American entrepreneurial spirit, right?
Yes.
And you know, that's a big bet. And being able to do that requires risk management. And that's where using options and things like that really comes in to help them manage that risk.
About four decades ago, when I sat on the Board of Trade Director list, I was disappointed that the market wasn't doing a good job of educating people. Since that time, however, I've seen you at state fairs and county fairs and everywhere going after the young people.
You know, if you think about the demographics that have changed, we're seeing more and more people live in cities. We're seeing the little small towns where places like I grew up, shrinking. Yep. And as that happens, there's less and less people that know a farmer or see a farmer or their uncle's a farmer or. And they don't really understand agriculture the way kids used to.
Yeah.
And we think it's really important for them to understand that. We think it's important for them to understand the story of where their food comes from. And equally important, we think it's important for them to understand that farmers have risk. And it's just not as simple as I put it in the ground and I get it up every year and I get a price for it, or, I take this animal and I feed it and, I sell it to the packer. One of our focuses is there's risk, and what are the inputs to that? What do I have to go through, whether it's production risk, then there's market risk. And so we think it's really important, particularly with people not on the farm, but people in the urban areas,
right,
to understand that and to understand the role that the farmer plays in the food value chain.
We welcome your participation in that, because it's something that we in farm broadcasting have been doing for years, trying to educate that, I call them the non-farm consumer, about what it takes to put food on the table and a roof over their head and fuel in the tank. And so thank you for doing that.
Well, Orion, you and the farm broadcast community are so critical in sharing that message. We can put the content together. We can go to state fairs and county fairs and do our part. But at the end of the day, you and your colleagues are in a position to help educate the masses to this is what agriculture is all about. And you guys do a job we could only help with.
Cooperative venture.
Yes.
Thank you, Tim Andreessen with the CME Group.
Thank you, Orion.
Always a pleasure to visit with Tim Andreessen, who works the agricultural contracts at the CME Group. Well, the cattle contracts, of course, will trade on Monday in reaction to the cattle on feed report issued this afternoon by the Department of Agriculture, pretty much in line with trade estimates. Number of cattle on feed November 1st up 6%. The number of cattle placed on feed in October up 10%. The number of cattle marketed in October up 6%. Traders saying pretty much a steady report, maybe a little bit negative. Then taking a look at the grain market there on Monday, we'll start trading soybeans at $9.90 and a half after gaining 20 cents a bushel today. December corn gained 6 3/4, ending at $3.43 a bushel. And the December wheat contract ended up 6 cents a bushel, $4.27 and a quarter. Traders saying that there was short covering working in the market today, and so some long shorts apparently modified their positions, and that brought the gain that we've seen, particularly in corn and soybeans for the week just ending. Well, again, markets close Thursday in observance of Thanksgiving Day. Have a blessed and safe Thanksgiving Day. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson, saying thank you for joining us on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.